Hello, this is World Business Report from the BBC World Service, where we bring you the latest in money, marketing, manufacturing, and yes, much, much more. Please review us, rate us, share us wherever you can. BBC podcasts are supported by advertising.
Wer die Finanzen eines Unternehmens managt, ist oft beschäftigt. Sehr beschäftigt. Sehr, sehr, sehr beschäftigt. Konto ist das All-in-One-Geschäftskonto, um Ihr Unternehmen zu managen. Egal, ob Sie selbstständig sind oder die Finanzabteilung eines mittleren Unternehmens leiten, mit Konto erledigen Sie alles in einer App. Geschäftskonto schnell eröffnet? Erledigt. Ausgabenmanagement? Erledigt. Buchhaltung und Reporting? Erledigt. Konto, das Geschäftskonto, das zu Ihnen passt.
This is a paid advertisement from BetterHelp. As a podcast listener, you've heard from us before. Today, let's hear from our members about what online therapy has done for them.
I would recommend my therapist 1,000 times over. She has truly changed my life.
The day after my first session, my friends and family said I sounded like myself again for the first time in weeks.
You deserve to invest in your well-being. Visit BetterHelp.com to see what it can do for you. That's better, HELP.com.
Hello and welcome to World Business Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Roger Hearing, and on this edition, we hear from the boss of Citroën on the French carmaker's latest model and how it could be part of the fight back against cheap Chinese electrical vehicle imports. Also, as the President of South Africa is sworn in for a second term, this time as the leader of a coalition government, how will the very different policies of his new partner, the Democratic Alliance, affect that country's ailing economy? Also, chip maker NVIDIA becomes the world's most valuable company. Is there a risk it's overvalued?
A great company can still be a terrible investment if the price is too high.
And how the campaign for equal pay for men and women in professional sport is playing out in golf. But let's start with cars. Electric vehicles are becoming the big commercial battleground between China and the West. In the US, President Biden has raised tariffs on Chinese EVs to 100%. Last week, the EU said it had provisionally concluded Chinese electric vehicle manufacturers would face tariffs from the 4th of July, should discussions with the Chinese authorities not lead to an effective solution. Well, a lot of this is based on fears that Western car makers can't compete with the low production costs from car firms in China, like BYD. Western companies are now pushing back, however. Citroën has just launched its C3 Air Cross, what the French carmaker describes as the most affordable and comfortable multi-energies compact SUV available in petrol, hybrid or electric versions. Well, I spoke to Thierry Coscas. He's the head of Citroën, and I asked him about the new car.
It's going to be very, very affordable. You remember that we revealed back a few months ago the new C3, our hatch car. That was very much a splash in the market because it was very, very affordable. We'll do the same with the C3 Cross. It's multi-energy that will come with petrol, hybrid and electric. And in a very compact frame, only 4.4 meter, we'll be able to offer also a 7-seater version. So that's the three main features of the car.
Well, you mentioned affordability there, sir, and I guess that is a big part of what you need to address because of the threat from the Chinese market. BYD, the BYD Dolphin, for example, potentially could be cheaper than what you're offering.
We have to face this competition. And I'm very proud that as head of Citroën, we are introducing cars that are very, very competitive, including towards the Chinese. This new C3 Cross in the electric version will be sold way below 30,000 euros. That's going to be a very, very competitive price, including versus the Chinese.
Well, you say that, and I take on board your point, 27,000 around euros, the electric version of this one. But, for example, the BYD Dolphin, yes, it's about 30,000 euros in Europe, but it costs about 11,000 euros in China. And if there's a new car factory, which BYD are planning in Hungary, that could bring their price down terrifically because there'd be no tariffs involved.
We'll see what happens. We'll see if the conditions of manufacturing will be the same if it's a Chinese manufacturing of Europe or a European manufacturing. At the end of the day, You know, our cars are made in Europe, in Slovakia, and we have a very, very competitive base. So I think that even versus a Chinese brand producing in Europe, I think we will still remain extremely, extremely competitive.
Well, yes, you are in Europe, but you're not in China, are you? I mean, and this is the problem with the whole competition. China is coming to Europe, but Europe and companies like Citroën are not in China.
Well, we are heavily expanding outside of Europe. You know that we will be probably this year with 30% of our sales outside of Europe. We have very interesting markets like India, Brazil, or Turkey. I just want to highlight India. India is probably one of the most competitive markets in the world. That's the country where the cars are the cheapest in the world. We are in India. We are leading a great product offensive. So yes, we are not or marginally present in China, but we are in one of the most competitive markets in the world, India.
Are you planning to have markets, open up markets in China? Is that part of your vision going forward?
We are selling some cars in China. Last year, we sold 20,000 cars, by the way, produced in China. So we have already so much to do with our offensive overseas. We'll continue, obviously, to sell cars in China, but it's not a priority in our expansion strategy.
Okay, but one of the priorities, I guess, must be for you, the competition with China. What do you think about the EU plans to put tariffs on Chinese EVs coming to Europe? Does that matter to you?
We obviously take that into account. We never, as a brand and as a Stellantis group, comment any political decision. The only thing I would like to highlight is we need to be able to compete against the Chinese or whoever with the same weapons as they have, which means the production costs. So that's why we generally praise open markets, because this is a way to really face the competition. At the end of the day, even if we do not compete in Europe in the same way because there are some tariffs, we will have to face the Chinese in other parts of the world. I can tell you that as head of Citroën, I am already facing the Chinese in India, in Indonesia, in Malaysia, in other markets. So this is very, very important to remain competitive in terms of production cost. This is what we need to do if we want to face the competition.
Okay, and what about the move towards what you've got here, which is a shared platform? You have electric, you have hybrid, you have petrol. Is that where you're moving now, all cars offering those options?
Well, absolutely. Citroën is a popular brand, so we need to fit to any customer needs. We are heavily pushing electric. We now have 8 battery electric vehicle in our lineup. You know that next year in 2025, we will have to double the share of our electric cars in our sales. So electric is a big move for us. But at the same time, we know that for some customers, it's not suitable. That's why we are so lucky to have multi-energy platform that enable precisely to fit any customer needs in the same car.
Are you confident, finally, Mr. Koskas, that companies like Citroën can compete with the threat from China in terms of taking cars into Europe? Are you able to compete on the global stage with what China can produce, as you said, in a much cheaper way?
We are very, very confident. Actually, I'm super confident since we introduced the new C3 and now the new C3 Aircross. This is a platform that is very much optimized. We have a battery technology, LFP, that is also very competitive. I think we have all the ingredients to be facing the competition. So, yes, I'm very confident.
I was speaking there to Thierry Koskas, who's the head of the French carmaker Citroën. Now, South Africa has begun a new era. Its president, Cyril Ramaphosa, leader of the African National Congress, has just been sworn in for another term, taking the oath of office in Pretoria in front of visiting heads of state.
I, Matamela Cyril Ramaphosa, swear that I will be faithful to the Republic of South Africa and will obey observe, uphold, and maintain the Constitution and all other law of the Republic.
But this time he's only going to be the head of a coalition government, after elections left his ANC party without a majority in Parliament. It means the policies of what had been his main rival, the Democratic Alliance, will have to be accommodated, including on trying to turn around the failing South African economy, which has continued to suffer amid power cuts, rising crime and unemployment. So how different will economic policy be now? Well, I'm joined, I'm glad to say, by Solly Malatsi, who's the national spokesperson of the Democratic Alliance in South Africa. Solly, thank you so much for being with us. What really do you want to change in the economic policy of this new government?
Thanks for the opportunity. But I think the key thing to recognize is that we obviously want to play a valuable role as one of the parties in the government of national unity that can help steer South Africa towards generating economic growth. Be that as it may be, one of the key things that will happen following today's inauguration is that the president will begin with the process of composing his cabinet in consultation with the parties that are part of the government of national unity.
Well exactly. Leader, are you guys going to get the financial ministry or not?
We did not make that a condition of our negotiations, but we have said that there has to be a consideration for proportional representation in the allocation of portfolios, and that proportional representation must be based on the electoral percentage that each of the parties that are part of the GNU have won. And that is a clause in the existing statement of intent.
Okay, Solly, now I want to focus very closely on economic policies. Now, you and the DA, you campaigned on a very different program from that of the ANC in terms of trying to sort out South Africa's economy. What amongst those things would you push for inclusion in the new government policy?
Well, any government that is obtained through a coalition is going to require a lot of compromise and alignment. And what we have agreed on is, subsequent to the announcement of the cabinet by the president, there will be a cabinet lekgotla, which is a convention that will then determine what the policy priorities of the government of national unity will be.
Okay, so what would you be looking for there, Solly? What would you be pushing for? Would it be, for example, tax cuts of some kind?
Well, we have said that, you know, South Africans are already overtaxed. So one of the things that we want to resist is the introduction of new taxes, because they've had a severe impact on South Africans. We'll also be pushing for the expansion of food items that are exempted from value-added tax.
But the country needs a tax income, doesn't it? So, I mean, it's got to pay for the services. If you cut taxes, how are you going to afford it?
Sorry, there's noise in the background.
Don't worry, I'll repeat my question, Solly. I was just going to ask, really, okay, maybe not expanding taxes, maybe even tax cuts, but how are you then going to pay for the services that South Africans expect?
No, we believe that the current tax regime is sufficient enough to fund even the social services that are there in South Africa, and that we will, if we improve our ongoing corruption busting efforts, will also be providing relief and saving millions of rands that are currently wasted and stolen through corrupt transactions in the civil service.
All right, Solly, we'll have to leave it there, I'm afraid, but thank you so much for being with us. Solly Malatsi there, national spokesperson for the Democratic Alliance, part of the new government of national unity, of course, in South Africa, which has taken office today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's all online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's betterhelp.com.
ServiceNow unterstützt Ihre Business-Transformation mit der KI-Plattform. Alle reden über KI, aber die KI ist nur so leistungsfähig wie die Plattform, auf der sie aufbaut. Lassen Sie die KI arbeiten für alle.
Beseitigen Sie Reibung und Frustration Ihrer Mitarbeiter und nutzen Sie das volle Potenzial Ihrer Entwickler. Mit intelligenten Tools für Ihren Service, um Kunden zu begeistern. All das auf einer einzigen Plattform. Deshalb funktioniert die Welt mit ServiceNow. Mehr auf servicenow.de/AI4People.
You're with World Business Report from the BBC World Service. Now, the US chip maker NVIDIA is now the most valuable company in the world. It's worth, as we speak, $3.34 trillion, with the price having nearly doubled since the start of this year. It's already overtaken Apple and Microsoft. Here's the BBC's Isabel Woodford.
Record highs, record closes for the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ as NVIDIA hits a record of its own.
Another day, another record for NVIDIA.
A year ago, the name NVIDIA was a mystery to most people. But yesterday, it became the biggest public company in the US, surpassing tech giants like Apple and Microsoft with a record valuation of over $3.3 trillion. The chipmaker has had a meteoric rise. 9 months ago, it was worth $300 billion. But investor appetite has seen its share price leap 173% already this year. That's amid a massive boom in demand for computer chips, especially ones that can run generative AI models like ChatGPT. Analysts say NVIDIA is in the right place at the right time, with its particular focus on AI giving them a head start against competitors, at least for now.
You know, they certainly are in a business that should have substantial growth, and obviously investors are already accounting for that. What, you know, my concern would be is how long the growth can be sustained, and are the valuations reasonable enough that we wouldn't have to have, you know, huge growth or very prolonged growth to really be able to justify buying the stock.
Melissa Brown, Managing Director of Applied Research at SimCorp, says the other issue is the level of concentration among investors in NVIDIA.
Investors have to own these stocks. If not, they're just taking too much risk relative to the market. But if something should happen and those stocks should start to fall, it's going to take everybody down with it.
Other big tech giants are hot on its heels, with Microsoft, Meta, and Google owner Alphabet all racing to build out their AI computing capabilities. Rival AMD has also recently rolled out an advanced accelerator. The question now is if NVIDIA can hold on to its position as the poster child for AI.
Isabel Woodford there. Well, the Californian company's meteoric rise has been fueled by its dominance of what analysts call the new gold or oil in the tech sector, the chips needed for artificial intelligence. Some, as we've heard, are expressing doubt about the real value here, however. In February, Barclays credit analyst Sandeep Gupta argued NVIDIA's large market share would be hard to maintain, given the increasing number of rivals, and questioned how NVIDIA's customers would monetize AI software. So is this then potentially a bubble? And could it result in a share price collapse, as happened famously with the internet hardware firm Cisco back in the year 2000? I asked the senior editor for markets and Bloomberg opinion columnist John Authors.
The parallels are obviously very strong, in that there is this very exciting new technology that nobody quite knows how big it's going to get or who's going to win. And the safest thing to do, the same as with the gold rush, is to invest in the people who are making the picks and the shovels. So Cisco became the biggest company in the world very briefly back in 2000 because it was the company that made the routers, the infrastructure you needed to make the internet work. And NVIDIA has got there now because it makes the chips that are vital to make artificial intelligence work. So the parallels there are very clear. There's no parallel between NVIDIA and the likes of Pets.com or AOL. Like Cisco, this is a real company that is making products that people really want to buy, like Cisco. But a great company can still be a terrible investment if the price is too high, which is Cisco is still trading for less now than it did 24 years ago.
And to take up your parallel, you know, yeah, the gold rush, once the gold stops being there, they don't need the picks and the shovels. I mean, in a way, There's no likelihood of that. Isn't it more the fact that there might be other people with shovels and picks that are as good coming on the market?
Well, that's certainly something that I think is being wildly understated, that NVIDIA plainly is ahead of the game at the moment. Its sales figures brook no argument. There are plenty of other really big companies out there that know how to make chips. And there are plenty of people who would love to buy something that's not quite as expensive as NVIDIA's. The other thing, this is where I think you really could say that this is a bubble in NVIDIA, is the kind of growth we've seen is completely unsustainable. It'll take over the entire planet in about 5 years if it keeps growing at the rate it's growing now. That's because lots of people, since ChatGPT came out, have rushed to buy lots of NVIDIA chips to invest in AI, and that cannot go on.
Is it also perhaps related to cryptocurrencies? Because a lot of people were saying, well, one of the reasons for the boost was Bitcoin and people needing the tools to mine Bitcoin and this kind of thing. And that in itself, I suppose, has a kind of arc.
Bitcoin is certainly a much harder one to judge. I do think one of the things that is genuinely clever about it, this is also true of Amazon and Apple, great companies do this. They leapt on gaming. Originally, they worked out that people would want really fantastic fast chips to do really hyper gaming. Then they leapt on crypto, the need for mining and computers that mine bitcoins involves having to do some incredibly heavy lifting with maths, and that's what NVIDIA could do. Then they worked out ahead of the game that AI would be something fantastic as well. So again, I think the risks with cryptocurrency are very, very much greater than with AI. But yes, you're quite right. They are following different things that create excitement. And the risk is that they will eventually follow a trajectory down once the excitement dies down.
Yeah, because I mean, I suppose one thinks of FOMO, fear of missing out, that a lot of people jumping into this actually don't understand how or why it's working, but just know that it looks good.
There's also the perverse effect. Lots of things are scary about the world at the moment. If you are worried about inflation, if you're worried about depressions and so on, you want to be out of bonds, you want to be out of the great number of stocks. Is there somebody that seems at this moment to be able to grow regardless of the economy? It's NVIDIA. So it's almost behaving like a traditional safe asset, if you get what I mean. Like nobody gets fired for holding NVIDIA at the moment, but also it appears to be relatively safe compared to a lot of other things going on in the world. Would you rather invest in the French stock market index or in NVIDIA? Incidentally, NVIDIA is now worth more than the entire French stock market. So evidently people are more excited about NVIDIA.
They would be, I guess. Well, let's pick up on some of those threads with Danny Hewson, head of financial analysis at AJ Bell, who joins us now. Danny, thanks for being with us. Well, how has NVIDIA done now at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, people are incredibly excited by NVIDIA, and the 10-1 stock split that they carried out at the beginning of June has really sort of fueled the fire. So, we've seen NVIDIA up 46% in a month, a massive share price rally, as people found that they were able to afford to buy these shares for the first time. So they were trading over $1,000 a share. Of course, with that 10-1 split, suddenly they became a lot more attainable for retail investors. So they've hit 135 in trading. It just demonstrates that there is a real appetite out there, if people haven't got in on the action so far, to try and do so now.
Well, I suppose people might feel they have more money to do that kind of thing because inflation seems to be coming down. At least here in the UK, we had some interesting figures today suggesting it's back down to 2%. But a lot of people urging caution. What's your thought?
Yeah, back down to 2%, lower than the Eurozone, lower than the United States as well. But when we're talking about 2%, this is a number which, when you dig a bit deeper, has a few potential issues. So one of those things which will certainly trouble the Bank of England when it makes its decision on interest rates tomorrow is service sector inflation. Yes. That's been pretty sticky. It's coming at 5.7%, which is higher than most people had thought that it would come in at. And of course, you know, when we're talking about 2% inflation, it doesn't mean prices are coming down. It just means inflation is coming down. Well, so people are still facing 20% higher prices than they were a couple of years ago.
Daddy, thanks. Daddy Hewson there of AJ Bell. Now, the gap between the prize money for men and women in sport is closing, but the pay disparity still remains high. Golfer Nelly Korda, winner of 5 consecutive tournaments recently, earned far less than Scottie Scheffler, who won 4. And although current and former female players like Korda and Mel Reid have made strides in the game, there's a big difference in the prize money they get. A lot of that disparity has been linked to the level of investment in the game. But as the world's top women golfers prepare for their third major on Thursday, is that about to change? Sam Fenwick reports.
It's really impressive from her, and she celebrated by leaping into the water, a tradition there.
On Sunday, April the 21st, 2024, American golfer Nelly Korda did something only 2 players have done in the history of the sport. She won 5 consecutive tournaments, including one of golf's majors.
All the hard work and the doubt, I worked through it, and it's been an amazing feeling these past couple of weeks.
While Nelly Korda was making her record-breaking run in the women's game, her male counterpart and fellow American Scottie Scheffler was doing nearly as well in the men's game. By the end of April, he'd won 4 tournaments, including a major, and came runner-up in a 5th. Despite Nelly Korda doing better, Scottie Scheffler took home $14.7 million for his 4 wins, while Nelly pocketed $2.4 million for winning 5 tournaments.
For me to get it here in Houston, it to be a major feels even better.
Back in 1978, Nancy Lopez was the first woman to win 5 tournaments in a row. I asked her whether the financial disparity between the men's and the women's game is fair.
No, it's not fair at all. I mean, these players, they work their tail off. And nothing against the PGA Tour, because I have a lot of great friends out there and they're great players. But these players do everything the guys do, maybe even a little bit better.
Do players find it frustrating?
Oh, yeah, it is. And there's so many players probably still that don't even have a sponsor on their bag. Thank God for myself, I was able to come out, win, and I made more money off the tour than I did on with sponsorships.
Nancy Lopez is a legendary figure in women's golf. She's considered to be one of the sport's pioneers. English golfer Mel Reid grew up watching Nancy, along with players like the American Julie Inkster, Australian Carrie Webb, and England's Dame Laura Davies.
Yeah, I think what they've done is massive. I think massive is probably an understatement. You know, they really did kind of move the needle. And I think that in a way that we can respect them is to try and keep moving that needle. You're talking about Nelly. I mean, Nelly's kind of our superstar, and it's really cool to be part of it and to see her do so well, because she's not only obviously a fantastic golfer, but she's just a really, really good girl as well. And she is going to grow the game because she's going to get more eyes on our sport.
Global media rights revenues for the LPGA, the Ladies Professional Golf Association, have risen by about a quarter since 2021. However, a more significant boost has come from corporate partnerships. These partnerships, particularly title sponsorships, have played an important role in increasing the prize money for the athletes. The LPGA told me that the total prize purse has increased by 70%. Mel Reid says that progress is being made, but that more can be done.
Yeah, I mean, we've had a 70% growth in prize money in the last 3 years, which is incredible. I think we're doing an exceptional job. Even since I've been out on tour, I mean, it's night and day, to be quite honest with you. We're growing in 100% the right direction, and we're kind of picking up a bit of speed now, which is amazing. But I mean, ultimately, it's TV, right? It's eyes on the sport.
The amount of money in men's golf has grown significantly since 2021. When the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia, the world's largest sovereign wealth fund, invested more than $2 billion into LIV Golf. This investment led to the launch of a new men-only competition this year. Last summer, there were reports that discussions were underway to include a women's tour in LIV Golf. However, as of now, no official announcement has been made about the inclusion of a women's tour in LIV Golf.
Sam Fenwick reporting there, and you can hear more in today's Business Daily, wherever you get your podcasts. But that's pretty much it from World Business Report from me and the rest of the team here. Bye-bye and thanks for listening.
ServiceNow unterstützt Ihre Business-Transformation mit der KI-Plattform. Alle reden über KI,
Aber die KI ist nur so leistungsfähig wie die Plattform, auf der sie aufbaut. Lassen Sie die KI arbeiten, für alle. Beseitigen Sie Reibung und Frustration Ihrer Mitarbeiter und nutzen Sie das volle Potenzial Ihrer Entwickler. Mit intelligenten Tools für Ihren Service, um Kunden zu begeistern. All das auf einer einzigen Plattform. Deshalb funktioniert die Welt mit ServiceNow. Mehr auf servicenow.de/AI4People.
17 members of Zambia's national football squad have been killed in an air crash. The players were on their way to Senegal for a World Cup game.
When disaster struck Zambia's national football team in 1993, many thought that was the end of the country's international football dreams.
These guys had a desire to take us to the World Cup.
The whole country was mourning.
Instead, it was the beginning of one of sport's greatest comeback stories.
We have to go on. We can't give up. We don't give up in Zambia.
Amazing Sports Stories from the BBC World Service presents the four-part series, Copper Bullets. Listen now by searching for Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.